The Jeremy White Show.
Our next guest is a member, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, one of the greatest heavy metal bands of all time. His latest record, KK's Priest, featuring former Judas Priest members KK Downing, of course, Tim Ripper Owens in there as well. Brand new record coming out on September 29th. You can pre-order The Sinner Rides Again wherever you get your music. Welcome back to the show, the one, the only, KK Downing. How's it going?
Hi, Jeremy. Fantastic, mate. Good to speak with you, buddy.
It's always great to see you. You know, I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day about the first time I saw you performing live. And it was actually mind-blowing for me because it was the first time I was ever front row at a concert on the barricade, right in front of the guitar player. And you came out rocking the leather, the flying V, like just all of it. And the lights were blinding right behind you. And I'll never forget that because it was just one of those moments. You know, I don't know if you've ever, like, coming up, maybe you, when you were going to concerts and stuff, I'm sure you've had that moment where, like, you're standing there like, wow, this is cool, you know? And that was one of my first ever, like, this is cool moments at a concert. So I just wanted to tell you about that.
So where was that, Jeremy?
That was in Montreal at the Bell Center.
Yeah.
I think it might have been like the Epitaph World Tour or something like that, or one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was so cool. I'll never forget that. Was production, like stage production, always a big thing for you guys?
Yeah, it was really. I mean, I think every aspiring younger band, as we were then in the very early 70s, you know, you just dream of those big productions, you know, just like your favorite bands that that would come round and that you would see that had something, you know, because we in England, you know, you would see obviously Pink Floyd and Genesis and Rush had a great show and, you know, lots of great bands. And you thought, oh, if only I could be up there on that stage with that big production. So, you know, if you work hard and long enough and stick at it, inevitably it grows and grows. And that's what happened to Judas Priest.
Yeah. Were you, you mentioned Rush, great Canadian band. Were you a fan of Rush at all?
You're a fan of everybody, you know, but growing up, because everybody, you know, you have to have that realization that all of these great bands, you know, and you know, us guitar players, we everybody has fingerprints, don't they? No two guitar players play the same, and everybody can do something better and or different than you can't, you know. No one guitar player can have it all, but some players don't need to have everything because what they've got is good enough, you know, and it's great, you know. You know, the great Jimi Hendrix, you know, I mean, he may not have been able to play jazz or flamenco or, you know, had various techniques in his arsenal, but what he had was more than enough for more than one guitar player, for sure, you know.
Yeah. And especially guys, you know, like Page and Hendrix and Beck.
You know, they were so good that all they needed was what they had, you know. Obviously, Eddie Van Halen, obviously, Yngwie, you know, they don't need anybody else's technique or style or abilities that can ride high. And I guess that's the same, obviously, with, you know, I think it's fair to say that we made a very good... A good career out of what, you know, myself and Glenn knew on the guitar was ample and it was good enough.
Yeah. Talking about Eddie Van Halen, I'm just curious, I mean, because at that time when heavy metal was just really, really booming and Ed comes out, did he influence, like, or, you know, make you change your approach to guitar playing at all?
No, I don't think so. I think not by then, because I think we'd already got enough shows and albums under our belt that we kind of had our direction. But certainly when we were younger, and that's a very influential age, yeah, of course, you know, when I was growing up in the late 60s and early 70s, everybody was an influence, really, because, like I say, you look to everybody, but you tried your best not to copy people and tried to your best to develop your own style. And that's the art. It's kind of, until you've got to keep on going, maybe with a blindfold on, or earmuffs, I should say, really. And you could admire and be influenced, but never copy. You know, you've got to develop yourself.
Yeah, I always say, a lot of the best artists are the ones that wear their influences on their sleeves.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. And I certainly do. You know, obviously with the great Jimi Hendrix, I first saw him in 1967. I saw him a bunch of times in the 60s, you know, and I was so in so much adoration for the guy, you know, because he was kind of the all-in package. He had all the ooze charisma, you know, the way that he looked, the way that he performed, the way that he played, you know, and he also sang as well and made great records. He seemed to be the all-in-one package, you know, but it's better to turn the other way, really, and try to see what you've got in your own arsenal, you know.
Did you ever have that little bit of self-doubt when you're like, oh man, like, how am I gonna do that?
Well, yeah, I think to start with, really, Jeremy, you trundle along and you don't take yourself too seriously, you know, and but slowly and slowly, you know, you're thinking, well, maybe I could do this, maybe not, you know, but you're not going to go out there and start boasting or bragging or cheerleading just yet, you know. You just got to cross a few thresholds and hurdles, and after a while, you start to maybe believe that you can do it. You know, it's a slow process.
Yeah. Talking about making great records. Here we are in 2023, some, years later, and you're still churning out absolutely incredible riffs. The Sinner Rides Again coming out on September 29th. You could pre-order it now wherever you get your music, KK's Priest. Talk to me a little bit about recording this record and what was the process going into this? Were you like, we need to make another badass heavy metal record because the world needs it right now?
Yeah, it was set of circumstances, really, mainly the pandemic, the COVID, obviously. So the first record was done really, really fast. The writing process and everything, you know, just literally a few weeks. And then obviously the recording process and making it, refining everything, that took a bit longer. But it was put together really, really quick because we wanted to get out on tour, you see, and catch the seasons, the summer festivals that year. But COVID came down like a big iron curtain and shut everything down. And so we kind of, you know, but bravely, we did go ahead and release the record in October 21. And but still no show. Promoters and the agents were saying, you're not going to get out. There's such a backlog of bands, of gigs that have been booked and need fulfilling. So we thought, well, I thought, right, you know, here we go again. So Christmas, well, January 2022, I just did the same thing again, really, shut myself away, you
Yeah.
know, dead of winter, and just thought, well, that's it, make another record. What else can we do? And I thought to myself, everybody must be doing the same thing. And they probably were. But anyway, so we've got two Virgin albums now ready to go. Brand new album, as you say. You know, I'm really proud of it. I think of both the records, I think they're kick ass. And so we're looking to get out there and do extensive touring on the back of two new records, really.
Right. And the band that you've got performing with you, I mean, you guys are firing all cylinders. I mean, you got AJ Mills on second guitar, Sean on drums, just absolutely slamming. Like, the production of the record, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm really pleased with it. You know, the only difference with the second record is I just add the fancy to kind of metalize it a little bit and make it a little bit more edgy, you know. So that's what happened. And so, in actual fact, I handed it over to Jakob Hansen in Denmark to mix and to master. And that helped along because, you know, he's kind of the go-to guy to if you want something metalizing these days, you know. So
Right.
that was very pleasing. So he did a couple of tracks, sent them back to me. I thought, this is great. Let's just go with it and get on with it. So Jakob did a great job.
You mean you weren't gonna go to Andy Sneap and get him to mix it and master?
No, Andy was busy trundling around with Judas Priest somewhere. But Andy's great. What a talent he is, you know. I mean, I think he's just finished the new Accept album, and now he's jumping on with Saxon again. So, you know, I mean, he's such a busy guy. I don't know how he fits it all in, to be fair.
Talking about producers and just production in general, I mean, one of my favorite records of all time, and you know, I mean, it's one of the biggest heavy metal records ever, British Steel. Just the sound of that album, I think it helped carve out record, create the template for other records that came after it. When you guys were recording that album, what was the thought process there? Like, was Sonics very important to the band?
No, I think we just kind of switched on to autopilot and just tried to capture what we could hear in the room, you know, which was we seem to always be struggling to find the energy and the realness of what we could hear, you know. And it's difficult because you've got all these speakers. It doesn't matter how many you've got, speakers and amps, you know, in the studio. You've got to push everything down a little cable, really, via a microphone, and
Yeah.
that's what you're governed by. And so, you know, we always kind of was a little bit frustrated. We wanted to capture the balls of the band in the way that it sounded live. You know, and kind of being a little bit kind of new kids on the block, it took us a while to get a good understanding and get a grip of how you could do that, you know. So, but with British Steel, we were really, really quite pleased with how that sounded, you know, through the studio monitors. We think we got the transfer of what we wanted, you know, to come through all of that miles and miles of electrical cable and come out sounding proper ballsy, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, working with Tom Allom, I mean, who engineered some of those great Sabbath records, I mean, like he kind of knew how to get a good sound.
Yeah, Tom had a good ears, but he definitely knew his way around the studio, and I say he really helped us to capture where we were at that point in time, really.
Do you remember your guitar rig at that time, recording the record?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, just 50-watt Marshall heads and Marshall 4x12 cabs. And both myself and Glenn were using the old trusty Range Rover treble boost, which people like Brian May, Rory Gallagher, you know, they used with their Vox AC30s. But it worked just as well with a 50-watt Marshall head, you know, or a 100-watt Marshall head. Myself, both myself and Glenn used to use go backwards and forwards between the 50s and the 100s sometimes.
I was reading a little bit of Rob Halford's book, and he was talking a little bit about the songwriting process of, like, you know, like writing Living After Midnight. Do you have any recollection of that time and, like, you know, writing those songs?
Basically, we went in to do that album, British Steel, and we didn't have all of the songs. That's why we set up rigs in a room called the writing room, which was actually the room where John Lennon was playing the piano for Imagine, and Yoko was opening the shutters. That was the room that we were in for our songwriting room. It also had a what you call them, like a foosball football game in there, and a television. So it was our hangout room, really, in a songwriting room. But yeah, we would do work all day long, and then we would kind of go to the pub and come back from the pub and then pick up the guitars and just hammer out some riffs and try to look for some that new songs that we hadn't written yet. So that's kind of what we did. And songs like The Rage and stuff like that we put together in that room, you know, and as you say, everything else that we didn't have at that point, we kind of knocked out the riffs, kind of later in the evening. And I think that's where, I guess it was after midnight, you know. Sometimes we'd be in bed and we could hit, you know, it might be Glenn or myself, you banging out riffs, which is really annoying, but inevitably you'd get up and go down and put the song together, you know. So, because we needed the songs.
Right. Talk about arrangement a little bit. I mean, like, you know, you listen to the drum intro in Living After Midnight, or like that, you know, first snare hit on Breaking the Law. Like, was that intentional? Was that, you know, was that like the band or was that the producer in the studio? Like, where did the stuff like that come from, like arrangement wise?
I think it was just the band, really. Everything really came from the band. I think the production side of it, Tom had a good musical ear. He could play keyboards really quite well. Tom was good with harmonies. So Tom was good in that respect. But from what the band wanted to do, when we wanted to kickstart a song, I think that came from us because we knew we'd got to play everything live, you know, on stage. So we thought that's how it came about, you know. And yeah, I mean, I think the whole album was recorded in a month, really, even including putting new songs together.
Wow. So it happened very fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Was this record, the new one, sort of the same thing? Was it like a fast process?
Yeah, absolutely. It was great because there was just, I mean, I used to be the sole writer back in the late 60s and early 70s, you know, before Glenn joined the band. But obviously, so we were always a collaboration, myself, Glenn, and Rob, and everything we did was great, and I wouldn't change a thing for the world. I'm very proud of it all. But it was kind of nice on these records just to shut myself away and just get on with it, you know, at my pace. That was kind of nice. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised how fast I could just put everything down.
How does the song work for you? Does it start with a riff or do you have a song title and a melody?
Yeah, I like the song title first. I like that, you know, and that just leads to everything else that comes after it, you know, but it's got to be, I like the titles that I know they're automatically going to connect with an audience. Songs like Living After Midnight or Breaking the Law also, you know, songs like that, that's an automatic connection there because we can all relate to those, you know. And same with songs like, you know, One More Shot at Glory or Wash Away Your Sins or Pledge Your Souls or, you know, Metal Through and Through. I just know that those songs are going to have an automatic connection, you know. So as a starting point, it makes sense that those the lyrical direction is going to control, you know, the mood and the theme and just everything that goes with the music, you know, dictates, you know, a song title is going to dictate the tempo of a song, I think. I mean, like One More Shot at Glory, you imagine, you know, the marching armies, you know, in a gladiatorial fashion. So, you know, the tempo is going to be, you know, you kind of, to me anyway, that's what it means to me.
Yeah.
Conjures up that, you know, battalions of like these real rough tough dudes that are going to, you know, whatever, that have this great belief of what they're marching for and what they're going to be fighting for, you know, and to the death. So, you know, none of that happens at a, you know, ballistic tempo or something that's really, really lethargic. It's going to start off with the armies marching to meet each other. You know, the battle is going to be more frenzied, obviously, and you can have those up tempo moments within that song, but it has to be laid down, you know, to set the scene, so to speak.
I love how excited you get when you talk about the process, because it's like, you know, it's almost like you see the picture in your mind and you're trying to translate that through the fingers onto the guitar and onto the tape.
And that makes it come together very quickly, lyrically and musically. You know, that gives you a direction because it gives you that kind of imagination, that landscape. You know, it starts to be filled in, you know, with all of these images. And that helps with the putting the music together a lot, you know, an awful lot.
Talk about touring. Got the band doing a couple of shows, October 7th in Birmingham at the O2 Institute, all the way through to October 12th, going to be at the O2 Shepherd's Bush Empire in London. What can fans expect from the live show? What's the set list going to be like? Mix of old stuff, new stuff?
Well, we've just been out and did some festivals in Europe and looking.
How'd they go? People like.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You can find them on YouTube. We did Legendas de Rock in Spain, And we did Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. And then we had a bonus festival, which we found out the day before. So we just drove overnight from Belgium to England and did Bloodstock, and we went on before Megadeth, the other festivals, and we did a festival, Tantra Rock Festival in Sweden. We headlined that as well, a night there. So that was good. That's all on the internet. And so people can get a good flavor of what the band's like if they tune into those shows. And what we're going to do now, headline our own shows in the UK, and also a show in Malta in the Mediterranean, which is going to be fab. So yeah, we're out there with Paul Di'Anno, obviously, who did the first two Iron Maiden records, and an all-girl band outfit, or they're kind of just type, they're like a female Judas Priest. They're going to be on the band on the bill as well, so that's really exciting. And they're called Burning Witches, so check those out on the internet as well.
Yeah. It sounds like it's just going to be a good fun night of metal. I mean, it sounds like a good time.
It will be.
Yeah. New album, The Sinner Rides Again, KK's Priest, coming out September 29th. You can pre-order it now, wherever you get your music. You're doing the CDs, you got the vinyl, you got the digital download, you got tons of merch as well. So you're rocking the KK's Priest shirt right now, which love. Free
Yeah.
promo.
Yeah. It's new merch, though, so new clothes to wear, which is great.
Talking about direction and just songwriting and stuff. I mean, of course, Judas Priest sort of went through a lot of different iterations through the years, whether that be lineup or just sound in general. I mean, you go from Turbo Lover to Painkiller to Breaking the Law. I mean, it's
Yeah.
kind of all over the place. Just talk a little bit about Painkiller for a second, because first of all, that was the first record with Scott on drums. Was that an intentional statement for you guys to say, okay, we got a new drummer, we need to put something out there that's just going to blow everybody's faces off and say, this is the new sound behind the kit?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the addition of Scott, because we knew his capabilities from his former band, Racer X, which were a great band, and but Scott had all of this, after so many years having Scott in the band with those double kicks again, I mean, it just gave us it just opened doors for myself and Glenn to write rhythmically, musically, and we knew that Scott could play anything that we could, as fast as we could play on guitar, we knew it could match us, on the kits, which helped a lot, really, because it meant we could expand our writing after so many years, really, in respect of, the fast, the faster side of metal, if you like.
Yeah, a song like that, Painkiller, what comes first, that drum intro or the guitar intro?
I think probably then, my style and technique, I always start with a good strong chorus, but back then, the writing process, we all used to like disappear, usually to different countries, and put lots of musical ideas down. So I would put a lot of guitar ideas down. Glenn would do the same. Rob would draft up some lyrics. Then we would all come together to see what we'd got, And so lots of times a song could start with a guitar riff, or a chord sequence, and that could be melodic, it could be blistering fast, or sometimes Rob might just hand over a song title, and maybe that might inspire it. But it could come from any direction, any source, really. Whereas with myself, I just think I can do it faster and more methodical and just pump it all out. If I start with a strong title and then look for a good sub-chorus, to lead into that, and that would, give me the inspiration for the storyline and all of the music to follow.
I don't know if you know this or not, but September 14th is the anniversary of Painkiller coming out.
Sure.
So today, 33 years ago, Painkiller by Judas Priest unleashed on the world.
Yeah. Well, if I had a guitar to hand, I'd compliment you with a riff, but
Oh my God, go grab one. Come on, grab a guitar, KK. Please.
that'll be in the other room, won't it?
We got time. Go grab it. Man, play some
I'll
riffs.
grab something. Hopefully,
Yeah.
it'll cheer.
I love that. KK's Priest, man. You guys got to pick up this record. The Sinner Rides Again out September 29th. You can pre-order it now via Napalm Records. Wherever you get your music, you can pre-order the CD. You get the vinyl. It got all kinds of great merch and catch them on the road. They got gigs all the way through the end of October and gonna be great. Oh, look at that. We got the White Flying
Check
V.
this out. This is the new KK model here, but no amplifier.
Oh, I can't hear it. Wait, you gotta put it closer. Put it closer.
Where's the mic? It might work now. Do you get
Love
it?
that. Yeah, it's popping in and out, but I don't know. Do you have AirPods in, or is it the laptop?
No. I don't know how this works. No. I've got some separate speakers that I can hear you from, but I am. It's probably the microphone, I think, is in this camera here,
On the
isn't it? It
webcam, yeah.
is a bit put off. But anyway,
Like,
there
okay.
it is. This is the newest, latest one, all the way from San Diego. So, but anyway, happy anniversary, Painkiller.
Love that. Love that. Well, listen, I'm gonna let you go. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat. As always, we'll do this again. Best of luck with the record. Man, I can't wait to see some videos online. Oh, by the way, speaking of that, just real quick, a lot of bands are putting this new rule in where they don't want fans taking videos of their shows. And I think it's counterproductive because isn't that free marketing for the band?
Well, number one, I don't know if you'll ever stop that, but I think the fans like to do that, don't they? And no, I think it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. I mean, there's tons of our shows, videos of our shows out there on YouTube, and I think it's great. It's good for us to be able to watch it back as well if we don't actually film the shows ourselves, you know. And the good thing is they're from all different angles as well,
Yeah.
which is kind of cool. And good, the thing is, you know, we don't get to see our show from the audience perspective, so watching the videos is pretty cool, I think. You know,
Yeah.
we can see where we look a bit stupid, or oh, I slipped up there, oh hang on, you know. It helps you refine your gig, doesn't it, really, if you can see it from the audience perspective.
Yeah, and then you can go to the sound man and be like, "Oh, come on, why wasn't my guitar loud enough?"
Yeah, exactly. There
Hey,
is that as well, and that does happen, doesn't it?
the way, just grab your guitar again real quick. I saw you had a Floyd Rose on there. Have you always played Floyd's or
Yes. No, actually, I played Taylor's before the Floyd. But this is what's called the Floyd Rose Speed Loader. So what happens is you don't use the machine heads at all. The
Oh yeah.
string stops here. So literally, you can if you just press that down like that, the string just it pops out like that. And so, for example, there's the whole string off the guitar, and then you just pop it back in. And so you can change the strings in about, let's say, a minute, something like that. So
How
that just
about but how about
pops back
tuning?
in.
So you're not even using the tuning pegs.
No, you're not. No, you use it. Everything's done down here.
Wow. I'm
You
gonna have
know.
to look into this.
Yeah, but so it's pretty close to being in tune now, and I've just took the string off
Wow.
because it's you only actually use what's actually from the nut here to the bridge there. It stops there, so all of the string is in play, you know. So there's nothing surplus to requirements, which is
Right.
pretty cool. It's
Yeah.
pretty cool.
I guess, yeah.
Technology moves on.
It's come so far. Are you still using real tube amps, or have you gone the route of the neural DSP and
Yeah, I go backwards and forwards sometimes, you know. I mean, some of the new gear, you know, clean tones are fantastic, you know, and some of the processors now got some fantastic some fantastic effects in. You know, I mean, the amount of different delays you can get now in some of these effects, you know, I mean, it's like ridiculous, you
Yeah.
know. But anyway, I'll bring an amp in here next time, Jeremy.
Yes, please. I'll come back for the next album anniversary. Do you remember your guitar rig? What you used on Painkiller when you guys recorded that?
Yeah, that would have been the same setup, really. You know, myself and Glenn, you know, for many years we didn't change, and that's why I guess it defined the Judas Priest sound, really. You know, but even now, if I do plug into some new gear, my ears automatically are searching for that sound that I can hear, you know, inside. So if you can hear it with the stuff that's around now, you can tune it in pretty close to on pretty much everything, you know. But you have to hear it, don't you? Because it is in the ears and the hands, I think, just as much as it is in the equipment.
I think, and a lot of guitarists will say it, 90% of the tone is right here.
In the hands, I think Eddie said that, you know, I mean, and I think he's right, you know. I swear, if Eddie had have ever plugged into my rig, I'm sure he would have sounded just like Eddie Van Halen, you know, and vice versa.
Yeah, plugging into Ed's, those Marshalls or the 5150s, you know. Did you
Yeah.
ever try the 5150 amps? Have you ever tried those?
I can't say I did, actually, you know. There's so much gear lying around, isn't there? You know,
Yeah.
inevitably, if you do go to a studio these days, there's you know, there's tons of amps or whatever's lying around, you know. But like I say, I think I can pretty much dial in the tone that I want with pretty much everything, really.
Right. Through the 80s recording, and just because we're talking about recording it, we said bye already, but now we're still going. I'm curious, did you guys ever use like any type of programming in the studio, like Fairlights or Synclaviers or anything like that? It was always just live, the band off the floor. Love to hear that. That's awesome. What do you think would have happened had you guys worked with a producer like Mutt Lange or like a Bob Rock or Bruce Fairbairn? Do you think that would have changed? What do you think that would have done to the band sound?
Well, that's a good question. Nobody's ever asked me that before, really. But producers certainly, you know, have the potential to change a band completely, especially people like Mutt Lange, as you say. You know, he obviously knew what he wanted to get from Def Leppard. Yeah, producers can have a profound effect on, you know, a band's sound and potentially direction as well.
Did the producers you guys worked with through the years like have that effect on you, or has the sound just always been Judas Priest?
Yeah, no, myself, Glenn and myself, we were always there. We were always there for every note that was ever played or mixed, you know, always there. We had a pretty good idea of what we wanted, really, and we were pretty as one in respect of that, I think, really,
Right. Well,
for
that's
the most
awesome.
part, yeah.
Well, listen, this is great. The Sinner Rides Again, KK's Priest, available wherever you get your music, September 29th. You can go and pre-order that now. Go watch the great videos online, see the band live, and make sure you follow all of their socials. And go blast Painkiller today because it's the anniversary.
The anniversary, yeah. I'll do it right now myself.
Do
See
you
if
have
I
any
can
fun?
still remember the chops.
Yeah. Do you have any fond memories of recording that record just specifically because it's the anniversary?
Yeah, we were in the south of France, which was great. It was in a very remote place, beautiful studio. I think Brad Pitt owns it now. I think Brad Pitt and someone else took over the studio, bought the
All right.
studio. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah, we had a great time. It was, like I say, it was remote, but we got on with it. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We had some good times doing that, you know, but we were we got stuck in, really. We had a lot of work to do, and we did it. And Chris Tangarides came down to produce that album. Wonderful producer, author.
How was it working with him? Was he tough in the studio?
No, he was sweet. He was he was a good producer, Chris.
Yeah. And recording had come such a long way at that time too. I mean, just sonically, like that record just sounds so big, like the drums and even the guitar tones.
Yeah. We were fortunate on that record because I think we managed to get a guitar sound pretty much straight away, which was great because a lot of other studios you have to really fight for it, but we didn't realize how for many years how what such a big effect the preamps in the desk played a massive part, and that's why some studios you go in and straight away the guitar sound sounded good and you just got on with it. For other studios, you have to really, really work tremendously hard,
Yeah, I mean, the guitar amp through an SM57 into a Neve or an SSL is going to sound completely different in the Bahamas versus in south of France.
A Neve, Trident, an old Focusrite, anything like that, your guitar sound's going to sound great. They've got the big old, a lot of them have got those, nice valve preamps,
Yeah. Was your recording technique always just, like an SM57 right in front of the cone or?
Well, we would multiple mic cabinets, have mics at room mics, but we had close mics also. I mean, studios have got tons of mics, so why wouldn't you put four or five on a cab? We
Yeah,
did, you know.
I agree. That makes sense. Well, all right. Well, it was great to talk with you.
You too, Jeremy.
Best of luck with the record, and we'll
Yeah.
chat soon.
Yeah, please give the message to all of our fans in Canada. Thank you so much for being patient. But we're ready now to rock. We're ready to go out the door at the drop of a hat. So if the promoters want to bring us to Canada, great metal territory, please do. And we'll see you real soon, you guys.
Yeah, we're looking forward to getting up here in Montreal. That'll be fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jeremy.
An all-new episode of The Jeremy White Show.
Available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.